This week on RSVNB Update, the beach is back with cocktails and new outfits. We share our favorites. It's also a combat bonanza featuring new bank presets, scrimshaws, and the ability to cease. Then it's documentary time when it comes to Elder God Wars requirements. This is RSVNB Update, episode 838, recorded Thursday, July 15th, 2021. The Elder God Wars documentary. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. This week, Tanis is away. Sirion, you and I were just talking about people going on vacation. He's off somewhere doing something. He didn't tell me where, but he went somewhere hot.
That lazy bastard.
Anyways, of course, filling in Tanis is Sirion.
Spoiling my butt off because he is lying on a beach somewhere in the sun.
Yeah, and we gotta lie on the beach in RuneScape.
Yeah, that's all we get. Pixely beaches.
Introduce yourself. Introduce yourself for those who haven't heard of you before. It's been a while since you've been on.
Introduce myself? Oh my goodness. What is there to say about me? Well, I'm an old-timer in terms of RuneScape. Well, I'm Sirion, first of all, and I'm an old-timer. I've been playing RuneScape since the classic days, on and off. Used to be a quester by heart, have slowly shifted away from that, and I am a massive nerd for game mechanics, so...
It's too bad we don't have any of those to discuss this week, but in any case...
Oh, I mean, it's probably for the better if you don't want the show to take another extra hour, but...
We had a nice big discussion last week about Emerald Bolts. One tiny patch note. 30 minutes on a single patch note. We learned everything we could learn about those. Go check that out. We have nibbles up of that at youtube.com/RSBNB. But of course, if you want to follow along with this, you can find that full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. I am Shane12088, and he is Sirion, and we're going to run through the week's updates, starting with the beach, Ninja Strike 24.
I want to say that's a record for how fast you plugged something, but then I think back and I'm like, I don't think this is even a record for you plugging something in the show this early in.
No, because, I mean...
You're the master of plugs, in a way.
See, the thing is that I was really proud of that segment, and Thaxi did a wonderful job explaining all that. And that episode seemed to get more natural engagement because of the topic of Emerald Bolts. So I just wanted to mention it again. And, you know, there's lots of good discussion going on about that. And we have that going on in the Friends chat, of course, at Bits Bytes. But one of the best places anybody can discuss that is the Discord, the RSVNB Discord at rsvnb.com/Discord. That's another place where we can all gather and discuss these kind of things. And lots of fun little news tidbits and whatnot that don't make the show that are related to... Old school RuneScape, which the popcorn emoji has appeared for. So if you're wondering what all that's about, check us out on Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. How'd I do with that one?
You know what? Some weeks like this one, we don't really have found mechanics and things to discuss, but that's not a problem because listeners can send us questions.
Yeah, and we do have some of those as well, and a brand new questions forum where people can send those in at update.rsbnb.com/ask.
Excellent.
Is there anything else you'd like to tee up for me?
No, I think I'm good.
A record. A record of plugs. And you might need all those plugs if you're going to the beach to plug the holes in your pontoon boat as you get to the beach. This week, the beach is back, and as we mentioned last week, there's a number of changes to it. Beach ball rolling has been removed. I always hated that event. That and Terror Bird Racing.
Wasn't beach ball rolling the reskinned cheese wheel rolling event?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Told you I'm an old-timer.
Yeah. Do you ever do cheese rolling in real life? Because that's a fairly Dutch thing to do, right?
No.
No? Okay.
Is it Dutch?
I thought it was.
No. We don't roll our Wheels of Cheeses.
I remember Cheeses of Wheels. I remember
Wheels of Cheese. Yeah,
I remember once watching The Amazing Race, and they I think it was the Netherlands, but maybe it was Belgium. They had to carry these wheels of cheese up a hill, and they just completely lost them. Old timers of the Amazing Race will know that.
Carrying, yeah, we have like classical, like it's like what's the best way to describe it? You know, like a hammock you put between two people.
Yeah,
and then you put the cheese, wheels of cheese, on that. And that's how cheese gets carried, the traditional way.
Okay.
And there's weekly cheese markets where it's all still done that way.
And I just want to apologize to anybody who's joining us here for, you know, the first time on this podcast. We normally aren't this tangenty.
You started about cheese. I mean, I'm passionate about cheese. It's in my blood.
I'm not.
Oh, I don't have blood. There's liquid cheese running through my veins, so...
Oh, my God. Okay. Beach ball rolling has been removed. Tick that off the list. New cosmetic rewards are available from the Runecoin shop, while old rewards are available from the Oddman shop. And the Dungeoneering hole is back this year.
Whoop, whoop.
Talking about new items you can get, of course, from this year. Claudia has her own set of drops, of course, that includes all the... cocktails that we've come to appreciate. You can apparently get 5 oddments from killing Claudia.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's really worthwhile.
Yeah. Other options from Claudia include the bronze sandals token, the bronze sun hat, the elegant sun hat, and the Menaphos beachwear token. That kind of threw me for a loop when I saw that they added a Menaphos costume piece this year.
Menaphos, how does that look? Describe it to me.
Well, it looks like... Honestly, it looks like desert garb. With no sleeves and shorts, and just a generic beige-ish hat. The entire outfit is beige. I got one of them.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I mean, that might work for your character.
No. Jess discovered.
All right, fair enough. The bronze sun hat cosmetic override. I don't know exactly. I mean, it kind of looks like the boater that we already have from the Clue Scroll, so I guess that's a good option instead that you could go for. But other drops include the Ammonite necklace, the beach towel outfit, so you could even just be running around in a towel. How's that work for you?
Oh, that's excellent. Well, that's a good outfit.
Yeah, I mean, it would just cover your midsection above your thighs, and then there's another one around your neck.
I'm waiting for the speedo override, man.
Well, I mean, with the new character... model coming in, there'd be even more reason to do something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I should probably have said that as part of my introduction, but yeah. My in-game character is known for, I don't know,
not wearing any clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he has a great body to show off.
I think all our characters do.
Hush. My character's known for it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the number one way you can track him down, that plus the fire-making cape. Another reward you can get is the Menaphos Parasol token. You know, I think my only complaint about these rewards this year is that the Menaphos ones are all very beigey.
They're not recolorable?
Yeah, they're not... Well, the towels are recolorable, but the Menaphos stuff is not.
Mm-hmm.
And
has some cool patterns on the Menaphos one, though. Like a, what is it? Like a lioness?
Yeah. Also, the elegant sun hat is another one that's available this year. It's a sun hat and looks like it's got a flower on it. So that's exactly the kind of thing you'd expect to see if you're just taking a cruise through Florida, I guess, at this time of year, perhaps. We also have the seashell necklace token. that gives the seashell necklace itself, and as that says, you wear a necklace of seashells. And then finally, there's the Stephanie pet, which when you do that, it unlocks
a seagull.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
I bloody hate seagulls.
Yeah.
Rudest enemies. Rudest enemies? Rudest animals. They're also enemies. Rudest animals.
Yeah, I know. Ever. I know sometimes you're just, trying to take a walk, by the water, and you hear these birds, and you look up and, oh, there's seagulls.
Yeah.
So, once upon a time, I was in a car, and there's a seagull, and this was near the water, and the car was going 50, 60 kilometers an hour, and no joke that the seagull was keeping up with the car.
Mm. You might poke the person sitting next to you and be like, see, go.
Oh boy, see, folks, this is what we're in for with him here. But
this is why I'm not here every week.
No, that's allowed. I mean, if you wanted to, you could. It's just a question of...
It's just a question of how long until I have an angry crowd of RSB&B listeners in front of my house with pitchforks.
Yeah, yeah. But in any case, I believe that's all the new rewards. You can buy these with rune coins right off the bat if you don't want to work the beach to get them. And all the old rewards from previous years are available for oddments. So... I'm going to be spending a lot of time at the beach, not only for the cosmetics, but do you know why I'm going to be there?
You're going to be there for the hole?
Yes, for the dungeoneering hole, and any advanced cocktail kits that I managed to scrounge up off of Treasure Hunter, because the advanced cocktail kit allows you to create specific cocktails geared towards beach activities, and one of them is the hole-in-one, which improves the dungeoneering hole, improves the XP by 10%, you can complete 60 floors instead of 20 floors without having to take a break, and the activity will not increase your beach temperature gauge. So there's that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that one.
I mean, it falls right into patent. It falls right in a pattern of Jarek's just handing out XP on a silver platter.
Yeah. Yeah. And, there's lots of questions about this with Iron Man, too. I don't think Iron Man's able to participate this year in terms of the bonuses and whatnot, but they are allowed to participate in terms of the items that give, the events that give XP. I know I saw lots of Iron Man characters running around there. So at least I think that's the case. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that. There's also the Ugly Duckling, which improves your hook-a-duck ability. XP gain is increased by 3 times your hunter level, and doing the activity won't increase your temperature gauge. This one seems kind of like the weak one of the bunch. Because next, we have the Palmer Farmer, that when you do this, drink this one, it will increase the XP from gathering coconuts at the beach by 300%. The trees will no longer deplete the fruit, and doing this activity won't increase your temperature gauge. So for anybody wanting farming XP that doesn't want to do farming through the ranch or the player-owned farm or traditional farming, the Palmer Farmer is pretty good from what I've heard people say.
Someone in the team that built this really hates farming is like, let me just sneak in this cocktail so I can get all my farming levels.
Yeah. And
in a way, it makes...
This one, despite me having almost 200 million farming XP, I have to say this one needed to be here. Because I played with the palm trees last year at the beach, and they just disappeared so quick that without this, there's really no point in interacting with them.
Yeah, no. Especially now that we have the... the farm and the ranch, which gives so much XP.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And I mean, even that was toned down a bit, but even if you still play your cards right with this, and we talked about that when those nerfs came in, it really didn't impact anything. As long as you keep your animals healthy and happy, you're fine. And then we have Fisherman's Friend. Did you know that Fisherman's Friend is actually a lozenge over here?
No.
Yeah, it's a very powerful lozenge that people take when they get a cold.
Oh.
It opens up your nasal passages very well. But Fisherman's Friend in RuneScape increases fishing XP by 10% and won't increase your temperature gauge. And then you have George's Peach Delight. This will aid in your sandcastle building activity. XP is increased by 10%. You could shovel sand up to 60 times before you need a break, and it won't increase your temperature gauge. Am I an evil person if I said I wish I could buy these out for oddments or rune coins directly? These advanced cocktail kits?
Why would you want that?
Because I hate dungeoneering. That's why.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the point of the game at that point?
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. I effectively went to, 114 manually doing dungeons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything else I've gotten since then has just been, dailies and laps. So it's not as though I did the entire skill that way. It's just at the end I'm kind of checking out on it. And it's just something about going to train dungeoneering. I don't know what it is. It's not for me.
Yeah, I get it. Like, dungeoneering is, you don't just, it feels like you can't just quickly pick it up for a few minutes.
Yeah, and it feels like one of those cases, too, where it's one of those skills that you have to train on double XP events, because you can do the same three or four dungeons, right, in a row. Or you can do those same three or four dungeons during double XP live and gain an immense more amount of XP. Yeah. And when it comes down to calculating how you're going to spend your time, it's better to just wait for a double XP event to do it.
Doesn't that account for all skills? Could also say, yeah, why would I do my farming runs normally?
But a farming run takes a double if it does less.
Yeah, and takes 20 minutes.
I think the average time for large these days is around 13 minutes.
Yeah, well, I'm not great.
Seven if you're try-harding.
Yeah. No, but like, isn't that the problem with everything these days?
I'm also factoring in the amount of time it takes to, bring people together.
Right, it might have more overhead, sure. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it feels... Double XP weekends come like clockwork these days.
Yeah.
Why would you train any skills outside of that?
Right, and see, that's the thing. If you have buyables, I think those are trained on double XPs, like your herblores, your summonings, your farmings. I think anybody who's wanting to be truly economical with that waits for the DXP.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's almost a... I think it's a challenge that the game needs to overcome. Like,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, we always complain about, there's this new weapon. Now all the old weapons are useless because the new one is better. It's the same with these events, right? Like, Jagex basically cheated themselves out of 90% of the game's content outside of Double XP Live. In a way.
If you want to get the maximal XP rates. Let's just underscore that with that if there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And skilling is not dead.
No.
Between double XP weeks.
You have Yak Tracks that effectively, put you on a different path. And when you're not doing a Yak Track, you're training a certain skill that you're wanting to level up.
Do you, though?
I did. I went Elder.
You're weird, though. You're weird.
Oh, that's wonderful. Everybody would love to hear you say that.
like I know that I am grinding archaeology like a chum. Between double XP weeks, but that's because I'm Iron Manning it on my account. But like I think that's not what the majority of people do.
No.
I notice so many people who don't come online between double XP lives because what is there to do? I think Yak Track is just a way to cheat people into still doing their skills. Is it really that effective? Back before we had Yak Track and double XPs every quarter, you would just go skill.
Yep. You're right.
Like, I wouldn't now... Like, I want to get 120 Herblore. Why would I set that goal to do that now? I could spend all that money, and then I realize, yeah, I could just wait for double XP and do it then.
Yep. Or
and get double XP.
Or here's another idea. In between double XPs and whatnot, go PVMing.
Yeah. Well, I don't like PVMing.
Yeah, well, you're going to like it because the Elder God Wars are coming. We have an announcement on Friday, and we're recording this on Thursday the 15th. We're not going to preempt the show for a trailer to talk about the trailer and record on Friday because neither of us have time for that, and we'll catch up with all that next week. But we got, obviously, here a good amount of combat fixes in Ninja Strike 24, the combat bonanza that is, you know, I honestly think all this is aimed at making the Elder God Wars first front, when it arrives, be just a little bit smoother for everyone.
The timing is probably not quite coincidental, no.
No, it's not. You know, I think the only question that's left is the first front coming on Monday, or is it coming a week Monday, based on when the trailer comes out? Though, based on how they've been going, I would guess that it's going to be Monday, and it could very well be out by the time people are hearing this. So, diving into Ninja Strike 24, 5 new bank presets have been added for all members, bringing the total to 15.
I don't even use 10, so...
Okay. These are actually useful for me, believe it or not.
Yeah, good.
Though
it's an interesting change, though. Like, it's... Bank presets is the kind of thing that in different games, or even in RuneScape for some time...
You have to pay for
it. Yeah, it's monetizable. It's interesting that is the kind of stuff that they decide to not monetize.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I was wondering how they were going to do this, and I had to have a look when I logged in terms of how they were going to represent this in the UI. There's an arrow button right next to the 10th preset in the bank. Or right next to the 9th preset, sorry. Right next to that cog in the summoning one. And that same arrow button is right at the same place on mobile. And you know how I feel about the bank on mobile. And I feel like this is just compounding issues we have with the bank on mobile. But I realize that's something we can't really complain about because... Is it too big of an ask that we have a bank interface that is comfortable on mobile?
I remember us having quite long discussions back when the bank rework came out and how important it is, because, like it or not, RuneScape is an incredibly interface heavy game, right? It's almost a management game to some extent. Outside of doing combat, it's very much a management game. So, you know, I think the bank, percentage wise, has spent a lot of time in that interface. I don't think it's too much to ask.
All right. Added a boss instance timer. The timer includes a button which opens the boss collection log for the enemy you're facing. The timer can be moved from its default position using Edit Layout, and to turn the timer on or off, navigate to the Information Window setting menu, which can be found under Gameplay Settings. And with this update, you'll see that the timer will show 59 minutes and X seconds, depending on when the instance started, instead of the full 60 minutes. This doesn't change the amount of time you have. This is just the first time that exact minutes and seconds and exact minutes and seconds remaining have been displayed visually. So it's always been 59 minutes and 59 seconds. It just hasn't been the full 60 minutes ever. New graphics have been added for the boss kill timer, and achieving a new best time will show you how you've improved compared to your previous best. Phase number and enrage percentage are now displayed under the boss's health bar for both Araxor and Araxi, and the redundant enrage buff icon has been removed. After each boss kill, players will receive a message stating their current kill count, and another message has been added for milestone kill counts. I don't know how I feel about that, because this is relying on the chat box again, and that can get very chaotic when you're doing PVM.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have questions about that one. The terminology used for the entrances to boss fights is now more consistent and will be labeled either instanced encounter or uninstanced encounter. The term custom encounter has been removed. Yeah, that's good. It was always confusing what the hell a custom encounter was.
Yep.
And messaging has been added to various places informing Iron Men that they may only enter an instanced encounter. Now, these changes, of course, here are all on the wholesale for the upcoming Elder God Wars fronts. I'm wondering if this this phase number and enrage percentage for bosses like Araxor can be used to foreshadow what we're going to see in the first drop for Elder God Wars, if it's going to be a phased boss like that.
Yeah, that will be quite a departure. I mean, Talos, right?
Yeah, that one's phased. QBD is phased.
And has enraged.
Though QBD does not have enrage.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if there's like one central boss again, the Nex or Talos. But it also wouldn't surprise me if that's not there
at the start.
As part of these forefronts. Yeah. Because they've always followed later.
And I mean, what are we to say? We're just a couple of useful PVM idiots here, right?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, yeah.
I told you about my hour at Vindicta where I got Crest of Zaros, right?
Yeah.
All right. The Cease Combat ability has been added. This ability will last for 6 seconds or until the player attacks again and will pause Revolution, pause Auto-Retaliate, pause familiar auto attacks, cancel a queued or special attack, immediately end a channeled active ability, or cancel charging a detonate ability. And when the effect ends, revolution will begin again, auto retaliate will reactivate, and familiars will resume auto attacking.
So, Shane.
Yeah.
This sounds mechanically quite complex, right?
Sure.
And I'm a programmer.
Right.
If I think about this. Oh, the edge cases.
I wonder if they've been found. I wonder if there's been any edge cases found yet on this.
I mean, surely this was added to the game without a hitch, right? No bugs, no exploits.
That we know of.
From what I understood, there was some. I only checked Reddit because that's what I do with these kind of things. But from what I understood, like it does a few weird things around eating food, and there seems to be a few ways to use it in ways you're not supposed to. I don't quite remember the details, so I don't know. I'm expecting us to see patch notes related to this ability for some time to come.
Yeah. And, you know, in doing what we do here around this, I asked around as to how this might be used. And, you know, the number one thing that does come up is Araxor for when the web special attack comes down.
Mm-hmm.
And also potentially areas of Virago as well that are involved when you're tanking. So that's where you might have a use for it if you're new at Virago. Though I've never imagined the day where people would... I wonder if people asked for this. Because I keep going back and I keep going back to that player advocacy group we had last year. And we know how that player advocacy group was stacked with people inside it who were relatively on the PVM side, though they did claim to lean into other areas as well, and they did have the credentials to prove that. We know there was that one PEG Ninja Strike, but that PEG did also put out a whole lot of other potential things that could be changed in the game, and I'm wondering if this is one of them. Though I will say I've never heard for anybody who PVMs ask for something like this. And the part that I'm concerned about is, you know, as somebody who has killed Araxor a few times, can do the QBD, can do God Wars 2, I don't know where I would use this. And I feel that these patch notes would be a lot more helpful if they included a few use cases for this about when you would like to use something like this. Because what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to, you know, just wait till someone makes a video on this or something?
Yeah.
Because to me, this doesn't look useful at all today. Aside from, you know, what I thought of at maybe Araxor. But aside from that, right? So that's the thing. I'd like to know where this is useful. And I feel like if this was something people really wanted, they would have been jumping up and down about this for a long time.
So I did some of my research about the glitch. So when Cease first rolled out, using Cease caused you to lose your target, which meant you could eat and use defensive abilities without adrenaline loss, and then re-attack again. This was hot fixed.
So if that's as bad as it got, that's probably not too bad then.
Be worse, yeah.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
But yeah, there was a JMOD response that they hot fixed that.
All right. Next up, added the ability to customize how perks are viewed on equipment. Augmented items and gizmo shells can display both perks and icons, or only icons or only text.
Because the designer could not make up their mind?
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, I feel like this is a decision Jagex should be making for us.
I agree.
Because you keep adding to the settings menu, and they did clean up the settings menu a bit. It's not as bad as it used to be. But to me, this is just something that is, it's like, why are you asking me about this? I'm just going to leave this on the default, and how many people are going to benefit from this? Is this a, you know, is this a 20% of the population, 10%, a 5%, or 1% of people going to benefit from it, right?
Yeah, I clearly don't care. I think it's silly to put, yeah.
Right. And let's also put ourselves in the shoes of somebody who does a bit of light PVM and knows what their perks are, makes it so that it only displays icons, goes away for 6 months to a year, comes back, doesn't remember this patch note, and wonders, where are these perks? Why is my text not there? Right?
I mean,
that to me is the case of why you don't let the player decide on this.
It also, it's just bad use of screen estate, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you are really concerned that the text takes up too much time, you need to redesign that particular thing, or you need to just always get rid of that text. Like, sure, games can have some setting. Like, for example, in Civ, you can choose how long it takes for a tooltip to show up when you hover over something.
Yeah.
So some customizability is not bad, but this detail, I... No. I think they actively... The solution is more evil than the thing they tried to solve.
Yeah, and my question would be, how much dev time did you put into this patch note, and what could you have been doing instead?
Yeah.
But...
I mean, it sounds like maybe something that a developer would do because they got annoyed with it themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Or it showed up a few times in the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Skills are now listed in alphabetical order in the settings. I think that makes sense. Now, here's a big one. Scrimshaws of the same type and tier can be combined to increase their longevity up to a maximum of 24 hours for one scrimshaw. If it's over 24 hours, you'll receive a new scrimshaw with the remainder. Used and combined scrimshaws can also be divided, which splits them down into new ones. Scrimshaws created in this fashion will be full and may be traded.
That is actually fantastic. I have a few scrimshaws that are...
partially used, let's just say.
Yeah.
And then you could just, go pick up another full one and then tack it onto sell the remainder of it, right?
Yeah.
Whatever you're not using. I don't use scrimshaws that often, so I wonder how they can be divided down. I should have looked into this, but... It's really something. I saw some screenshots showing, hundreds of minutes remaining on certain scrimshaws. But you ready to move on to the next one, or were you going to say something?
No, I'm good.
All right. Weapon tooltips now display attack range. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think so?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, all right, fair enough. And, there's always been a question of what those attack ranges are and how that works. And because, normally you used to be able to see on the ground where the individual squares were. And one of the old reasons back in the day everybody went for the halberd and now goes for the scythe is that they have an increased attack range. So now you're able to see what all the different attack ranges are of the various weapons. So that's a very good... change. Desktop users are now able to see the value of a dropped item stack and a list of the individual items in the stack, and this setting can be toggled on or off in the item drop section of the gameplay settings. And this is something mobile users have had, and it took this long to come to desktop, but I think this is a good choice.
Yep.
And
how does it look exactly?
Effectively, what's happening with that, you get the drop, and then it will just pop up, one of those little text boxes that, mm-hmm. like, when you examine something, it'll pop it up above the item stack.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual items, I believe, then just show up with prices underneath.
Oh, excellent. Because right now, I know it shows, like, a pop-up with the stack value, but yeah, having the individual item is good. Much easier to see what dropped and if it's worth picking up at that point. So, yeah, great addition.
Players may now collect as many self shards from the haunt and mine as they desire. Okay, I don't know why that's a big deal, but I'll take their word for it. And the text descriptions of attack options and gameplay settings are now more descriptive. And I assume this relates to the old style attack, strength, defense, and balanced and whatnot. I guess that's what it is. You remember back in the day when we used to have controlled? Is that how you fought controlled when they called it controlled rather than balanced? Where you get equal XP and everything?
Remember, I totally don't remember, but yeah, oof, that's been a while.
Because I know what I did was whenever I was training for a certain attack level or a certain strength level, I trained to that level. And then after that, I just go back and following from that, I would just go back to the balanced option. At least I think this is what it's talking about. I don't even know. I don't even know where you find gameplay settings for this in the menu. I was just looking to try and find this, and I had no idea where to look for this. Like, is this talking the powers menu, or is it bad that I can't find this?
I wouldn't know either. I don't have it open right now, but I would be clicking around here.
Is this us, or is this the game? Or is this me, or is this the game?
Oh, you're getting old, Shane.
Yeah, and you know, perhaps this is the reason we don't do it live. anyways. Mobile improvements added additional information about performance impact when adjusting advanced graphic options. I think you definitely want to have that on mobile, because you don't want to be killing your battery life unnecessarily. Fixed an issue that could cause the revolution bar on mobile to not draw properly. That's a big one. And changes have been made to that so that users can access the chat window on mobile so that they may chat while their player character is transmogrified or transformed. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Changes to the Dave and Dale tutorial. When you're leveling up either attack or fishing, the first level up camera pans, highlighting unlocked content, now occur if the player has completed the sandbox goal by following the alternate path.
Such a well-written patch note.
Yes. When leveling up either attack and fishing, the first level up camera pans, highlighting unlocked content, can content now occur. Ay, ay, ay. So it's not just me having trouble reading that.
No.
Fixed an issue on the Dave and Dale tutorial where the player would become stuck in combat by the on-screen level-up tutorial. You don't want that happening. You could die.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
Stalling Rack and Rune will no longer prevent the ability from reverting to Rack. Prevented a crash that could occur when skilling outs with other related items in the inventory, or when destroying right. skilling outs with other related items in the inventory. Of course, that means skilling outfits.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's a shorthand or if that's like an autocorrect typo.
Who knows?
Users logging into account with the invalid Slayer task with now have their Slayer task removed. Players that were unable to progress their Slayer task will now be able to claim a new task to begin.
On login. That was your fault.
On login. Sure. Perhaps we should rewrite some of these patch notes before we talk about them.
Yeah, maybe.
Though we shouldn't have to do that, should we?
No. No.
Highlight of this Ninja Strike for you?
I mean, the cease ability is pretty big.
Yeah. Are you going to try and find a place to use it?
No. Well, I don't care.
All right.
So I mean, it seemed like to be the big thing to get it with the bank presets, but...
Scrimshaws.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one, yeah. That's a good one. So I find, yeah, it's pretty lackluster in general.
Like. Yeah, but, you know, I think overall, these changes help, and... I don't think there's ever been a Ninja Strike that we have completely written off as not being needed. And I think the fact that we, as fairly long-term players, can go through this and find things that still make sense and are still useful to us is a good thing.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sure that there will never be. They will not run out of things to fix.
Oh, no.
Like, a game is too big.
And, I mean, and, you could go online and ask any week, you know, give us a list of things that you think should be updated or fixed, and you could always find those.
Yeah. But, yeah, I agree. I truly think that, you know, this is the kind of stuff that, if you don't notice, like, yeah, if you don't notice these things, it's a job well done.
Yeah.
So it's, in a way, it's a really... Yeah. People are not very grateful for these things, but I think if we hadn't had these ninja teams... or just ninja team fixing these things, I think the game would be worse, and
we
would be complaining about a lot more things. So, you know, polish.
Yeah, and you know, people have always been saying that, you know, you need to fix the game rather than adding new content, and I think the ninja team fills that gap fairly well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been thumbing around in the interface on mobile, and I have not been able to find the text descriptions of attack options in gameplay settings are now more descriptive. I have not been able to find where that is. I've been thumbing around in the mobile client ever since we were on that patch note, and I have not found it yet.
Well done.
So, I don't know. Maybe it's not on mobile. Maybe it's somewhere on desktop. So, I don't know. That is weird, and that's going to bother me until I find it. Would that be under combat XP?
Yeah, it could be.
I don't see anything in there. Combat mode? No, it's not in there. Familiar attack options are there. Action bar. Combat XP. Choose menu options. Targeting. No idea where that is. Oh, well, I'm going to have to go back to that later, because that bothers me now that I can't find that. All right, moving on from that, we got news. We got news that on Friday, I'm assuming it's going to be Monday, but that the first front of the Elder God Wars is going to be here. And you'll need 92 Slayer to take on these new merciless minions, as they call them. Jazz's army. You're also... Yeah. They also recommend tier 80 gear or higher, and that having level 90 in construction may also open up some unique opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we reading too much into this here, that this could be, you know, primarily a boss that you fight with your combat gear, but if you have level 90 construction, you might be able to do some sort of skilling with it to make it easier, as in this might be a hybrid skilling boss, combat boss? Am I reading?
Maybe build some ballistas or something like that.
Ooh. Am I reading too much into that?
I mean, there's going to be some role for construction, I think.
Yeah.
And, some mechanics that might make it simple.
But it's probably not going to be a hybrid skilling combat boss. That's probably
hoping
for too much, I'd say, right?
No. I mean, it might even be so that to get the fastest kills, you don't even worry about the construction stuff. That wouldn't surprise me.
You know, that's probably how it's going to wind up being for people who have, you know, the top gear and all the top tactics.
Exactly.
Whatnot.
But, you know, thinking about it, adding mechanics that make a boss slower, but maybe perhaps a bit more accessible for people who don't have millions or billions to spend on money on gear, I mean, not such a bad idea. So I'm going into it with an open mind.
Yeah, and I mean, we're definitely going to have a look at this when it arrives, and 92 Slayer, I think, is a pretty steep requirement on this.
You probably have tier 80 gear when you are 92 Slayer.
Yeah, I guess. But the thing is, I think there's two different things that come into mind when you're talking about tier 80 gear. You can talk about a tier 80 weapon, and you can talk about tier 80 tank armor. Or are we talking about tier 80 power armor that you want to use? Because there's two differences there. I think people, when they're leveling up and doing Slayer, and just leveling up in general, gravitate towards the tank armor, and then switch to power armor when they start PVMing. I think that's the way it goes. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any discrepancy there about whether this is that you want tier 80 power or tier 80 tank, because...
I use power armor for Slayer specifically.
Oh, you do?
It's much less deadly to do Slayer, right? So I'd rather speed it up than be safe.
Interesting. All right, fair enough. I know people who, when they're leveling up, just use the War Priest stuff.
I don't think I've really used it that much.
No. And I don't like hybrid armor either. I need to put that out there too. And that's why I never used any kind of hybrid armor, and I resist.
That's just not really a good use case
right.
in the game.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a boss that will...
You take a damage and armor hit for using hybrid. You take an armor hit. The idea behind hybrid is that you can wear that hybrid armor and use any combat style.
Yeah, so the idea with hybrid armor is that it protects against every style equally.
But not as well.
At 10 levels lower than its tier. Yeah.
Which, for the War Priest stuff, which is 75 hybrid, that's... Tier 65, and that's...
Dragon?
Yeah, that's Dragon. And, I mean, you really don't want to be fighting high-level stuff with that, so you should only probably use that when you get it. And this is my problem in general with hybrid armor, but we're going down a different path here.
We've talked about the things that are required...
Let's talk about what's not required.
Mm-hmm.
No specific quests are required.
No specific
for the
quests.
First front. And that includes City of Sintistan. Is not required.
It makes you really wonder, because the quest you need to do it to get access to Sintistan. So what does that mean for the front?
Right. Well, it means that, assuming it takes place in Sintistan, you're going to be harmed by that shadow energy. Unless that was a quest-only mechanic, which I highly doubt that's the case. Because, remember, you can make that ring after the quest that makes you immune from that. The shadows hurting you, right?
No, so, the shadows just stop hurting you in general after the quest. I don't think you need the ring for that.
No, you definitely do need the ring for that, because that's one of the benefits listed of making the ring.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. The thing is, you can't even get to Sintistan without the quest.
Well,
when you go up to the door...
Well, obviously, you're going to be able to get to it when the Elder God Wars front comes out.
Unless the Elder God Wars front is elsewhere.
I don't think so, because in the quest, it sounded like that was the fortress we were going to defend. Yeah. I don't know. They say that the minimum recommended to follow the story of the Elder God Wars is Azanadra's quest, Battle of the Monolith, and City of Sintistan. Also, potentially Desperate Times and Desperate Measures. Now, for the lore-loving player, they recommend the Elder God quest series, including Fate of the Gods, Heart of Stone, The Light Within, Children of Ma, Sliske's Endgame, The Needle Skips, Desperate Times, and Desperate Measures, plus the aforementioned Elder God Wars series quests. How do we feel about the quest not being a requirement for the front? At least City of Sintistan.
I like that we are getting all the new quests out of this storyline, and that we are... That the questers among us are really sort of... hitchhiking along with the Elder Gods hype and the story hype and all that stuff. But you know,
PVMers are going to be able to show up on day one and just go in.
I kind of would just had rather a inexplicable dungeon show up somewhere. And sure, there can be lore in a dungeon, but tying it to these quests, I think I'm liking it less and less.
You're liking the fact that the Elder God Wars is tied to the quest?
I don't like how we are bastardizing, like, the storytelling just to get to ram all this other content in, right?
Oh, it's you've never had a chance to air your grievances about that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not about to go on a long rant or anything.
Because we'd have to recap all Battle of the Monolith if we did that.
Yeah, no, I will spare you all that. Like, I'm not going to be about a rant. I'm just saying that, you know, not like this, right? I want more quests, but it feels like we're compromising so much by chucking a quest in there and then immediately forgetting about it again. Like, all the consistency and requirements and storyline is completely gone. It was a mess when we moved from the fifth age to the sixth age. It was a mess when they added no requirement for Desperate Times. Now it is an absolute
They also did
disaster.
The same thing for Azanadra's quest.
That's when they started to go and really sort of, you know, flip the table upside down and said, screw it, what are quest requirements even? And at that point, they completely lost me on that whole thing. Like, I understand the arguments, and I am somewhat convinced by the argument that
we want as many people to experience the content.
Exactly. But, you know, this is high-level content. You need 92 Slayer. Right? This is not something you're going to get day one players playing along anyway.
And with two play sessions, you could do Azanadra's quest and City of Sentistan.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the first time that, you know, things are hidden behind a boss fight. Behind a quest. Like, big pieces of content.
Yeah.
Miscellanea.
Oh, yeah.
For example, it's hidden behind a quest series.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example of something that I think everybody here considers part of the game. Nope, that's hidden behind a quest series. Fifth Dinners, right? Which everybody uses all the bloody time, has some pretty long quest requirements to get all the way up there.
Yeah.
So, and
I also got one more for you. To even get up the path, if you wanted to go to the original God Wars dungeon, you got to defeat the boss in Troll Stronghold. You got to do more if you want the teleport to Trollheim.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there is precedence, and sure, I don't think we should get these players to basically almost get their quest cape, right? Like,
that
blocking
would not,
content like this,
yeah, that
behind,
would not make
say,
sense.
While Guthix sleeps, which, back when we were in the fifth age, required basically all the quests that were out at that point.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Let's not do that.
But there's a bigger problem with this in terms of, you know, just, you know, have all these clean breaks. You know what else this is?
Mm.
They devalue the quest cape.
Mm. Yeah. No. I get that. So, I don't know. And it's not like they have to choose between two evils, right? They could just have made the quests about a different subject than the God Wars dungeon.
Yes.
I know this sounds like genius and intelligent, but it's simple as that.
And, you know, everything we're saying right now could be a moot point if the first front is not in Sentistan, as it was highly inferred that it would be at the end of the City of Sintistan quest. If it's somewhere else in its own dungeon, everything we're saying right here doesn't matter. I don't think.
I don't agree.
Okay.
Even then, the whole point that the Elder Gods are attacking is because we stole their eggs.
Yeah, in City of Sintistan.
In City of Sintistan. It's the same reason that, you know, it's another case of the world wakes. It's such a fundamental event, right? Half the content that comes out, well, no, all the content that has come out since does not make sense if you didn't do the quest.
Yeah.
As an, now, and City of Sintistan is such a pivotal event. It should not be a quest. I do not think it should be a quest. It should have been a world event. Or yeah, something like that.
And, you know, but here's the thing. We've asked that question before, why not more world events? And they say that, oh, if you're not there and you're not experiencing it in the thick of it, you don't get the full benefit of it, so it's better to do it as a quest in that regard.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. Okay, you make your point, then I'm going to say something that might break everyone's head. So you go for it.
I agree, right, that in a quest you can tell these stories better. But you can't tell these stories if everything is completely out of order. The consequences on the world aren't there. Like,
yeah.
For example, didn't you feel bad when Edgefill was destroyed after the ritual of the Majarat?
Yeah, we wanted to rebuild it, but it didn't happen for the longest time.
It felt like our actions mattered. It felt like what we did in these quests had a actual impact on the world.
And now we're just watching movies.
And now we're just watching movies about, let's say, if you do the Elder God
Good
voice
movies
dungeon,
at
and
that.
Then in a year you're going to do a City of Sintistan, you're basically watching a Discovery documentary about how the eggs were stolen.
Oh, that's the funniest thing I've heard all year.
I'm not wrong. So, I understand they want to hype up the Elder God West dungeon, but who are they really hyping up?
Yeah.
The PVMers are just sitting here. It'll be like,
they're licking their fingers waiting for it.
Give me the thing I can whack with my sword already.
Uh-huh.
And all the lore people are sitting there like, what the F are you doing with all these lore things? So I feel you're not really making anyone happy.
Yeah.
At this point.
You know, there was a good thing that was said in the Clan Quest spoilers Discord. Quests aren't prestigious in RuneScape 3. If you want quests to be prestigious based on the requirements, play old school.
You know, it hurts my heart, but you're absolutely right. That we left that behind at the World Wakes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we left that behind at the RuneFest 2018 Old School keynote.
No, at the World Wakes, we quests stopped being the thing. And I said earlier in my introduction, I used to be a fervent quester and now much more into mechanics. Now we talk about this, that period of time around the World Wakes is when that transition started. I think I am still a quester. But what we get these days are not quests.
They're narrative interpretations that we get to watch.
Exactly. I am a sucker for things like the Violet quests. Love them. Right?
Because they're traditional.
They're traditional. They're good. What was the other quest I really liked the other day?
Heartstealer? Valentine's Day one?
I don't quite remember, but like, it's those quests that I think are really good and fun still.
Alright.
But I don't care about your next Elder Gods quest. Just go stick it in a dungeon.
All right. Now, I mean, we talked about that, but there is also a section about useful items, and maybe this is why you do the quest. The Shard of Erebus from Battle of the Monolith will, of course, be useful.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the Pontifex Observation and Shadow Ring, they say will be useful as well. So that's why I feel that it's likely going to take place in Centistan because of what we see right here. So
I think it's good, right? I think putting benefits towards bosses behind quests is a fine thing to do. Queen Black Dragon does that, right?
Yeah.
I think Royal that is Crossbow. A great thing to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great thing to do, and I am not complaining that they are doing that here. I just don't think that the inciting event of the Elder God Forge dungeon should have been in the quest. I think that should have been a cutscene when you enter the Elder God Forge dungeon for the first time. And the quest should have handled a different series of events that are not
You know, come to think of it, they could have had a mini quest with the lore around Saren Zamorak Armadil. Who was the fourth that we got to help us? Saren Zamorak Armadil. Yeah, there was a fourth.
Saren?
Yeah?
Saradomin.
There you go. They could have done a mini quest on that and moving the eggs and setting up the defenses. They could have done, you know, if we're on the bent of, you know, back-to-back mini-quests, they could have done that for City of Centistan.
Or what about the bit where they move the eggs is just...
Or just a cutscene. Yeah, at the start of when you go in the dungeon for the first time.
Exactly. Then the eggs are there, right? The defenses are not. Then the quest is about setting up the defenses.
Yeah.
But you can skip that. You can just go and do all the PvM.
Oh, and then maybe
but
you could
harder.
Have... Maybe... Oh.
It's harder because you don't have the defenses set up.
Oh, what if that's the case behind the scenes and they're not telling us that? Because... Well, no. Because then it would have said that City of Centistan would have been recommended.
Yeah.
Because they only say City of Centistan if you want to follow the story.
Yeah. So I think that kind of setup wouldn't really have hurt the quests that much, I think.
And it would have provided more of a carrot and stick to do the City of Centistan. Though people
it would
were,
have provided
were already,
the continuity.
Yeah, but people were already jumping up and down about City of Centistan because of the spells it gave.
Yeah, well, that could also have been a reward of the quest,
yeah.
Right? But make that fundamental inciting action of that Elder Gods Wars. Make that not part of the quest. Take it out. Just do it. So that if you can't be bothered to do the quest, there's at least some level of continuity.
And it feels like this is all being done to lower barrier to entry. So that anybody who has the requisite combat gear can just go in whenever this arrives, presumably Monday, or already out if you're hearing this, and go start doing it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be my proposed solution, which it's better for everyone, honestly.
Yeah, it
Who
is.
Who really cared about that first part of the quest anyway, where you had to chase a few people to talk to?
Yeah.
Nobody. But dialogue boxes. You could have stuck more dialogue boxes in the quest. That to me, that was a misjudgment. A pretty grave misjudgment.
Yeah, and I think that's a difference between modern RuneScape design and what design of old would have been. And I think that's just where it comes down. But
yeah.
Who's to say here at Update we don't provide interesting content? We always do. We always do provide interesting content on all of this stuff.
Yeah. What I'm just meaning to say here is that you can say, oh, but that wouldn't work in today's world. I just proposed a solution that solves all the things that Jagex wants to solve and provides continuity.
Yeah.
So you just And that was just, I hadn't thought of this before the show. I just came up with that in the moment. So it, that's why, well, I won't want to say angry about it, but I'm not angry.
Yeah,
I'm
we don't get angry. We just,
I'm disappointed.
We roll with it. We roll with
I'm
it.
I'm disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always lots of content to talk about and content to look at. And, you know, that's what we do here. We talk about content and we try to provide that analysis to our listeners. And a lot of the places we also do that, we do that week to week, but we also do that in our monthly bits on Patreon, which you can learn more about at patreon.com/rsvmb. And I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters right now because, you know, it's because of you guys we have these discussions. So this week I'd like to thank Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., CGB900, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plugs, Danny C., Diana, Drama Free. There's three E's there instead of two, so that's why I did that. Dream Delayed, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stabeve, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. We truly appreciate it for allowing us to have these discussions, and you know, we have those discussions as well on Patreon in our monthly bit at patreon.com/rsbnb, which you can gain access to for as little as a dollar a month for the whole back catalog, including the most recent one we did on the story of RuneScape Mobile from its early prototypes at the tail end of 2016 to launch just last month. We talked about it, we covered it all from top to bottom. That was a fun monthly bit. You were on that one. So give that a listen at patreon.com/rsbnb. There we also, of course, offer a VIP tier where you can get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And we also have an insider tier where you can gain access to the clips that we use for the clip show. And I already got some clips on my list here from this episode, so you'll be hearing some of those as we progress through that. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, or you just want to support your favorite podcast, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. And, you know, we're currently working.
Thanks for paying us to rant for extended times about continuity in games.
Yeah. You know, we're working towards a Patreon, special Patreon gift. We'll be sending out at $200 a month. We're currently at $172. But there is also the Hot Ones challenge that'll happen should we ever reach 500. You already bowed out of this one, but Tanis, myself, and Parnassius will be there, and we'll be taking the Hot Ones challenge, subjecting our taste buds to very spicy chicken wings or popcorn chicken, I guess, in my case, since I don't like wings, because I don't like eating around the bone, so I prefer boneless. But lots of spice, and we'll also have spicy questions that I think we can all guess who's volunteered to ask the spicy questions, and that's going to be Earth. So unless you change your mind on spice, Sirion, but you're always welcome.
Nope.
I remember at the Clan Nandos thing after RuneFest, you got one of the weakest forms of spice you could get on your chicken.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would die.
But in any case, before we wrap the show up, we do have a question from Parnassius, and this one is about the RuneScape economy, specifically in regards to game inflation. Hey guys, Parnassius here with a quick question for this week's podcast. With the way that inflation has been going in game, do you think it's time for them to introduce a coin worth 1 million or perhaps even 10 million GP? Many items are now over the max cash stack, but they can't lift the 2.147 billion limit due to it being based on a 32-bit system. What that means is that when the game was initially built, the numbering system in the game could only count up to 2.1 billion. Therefore, perhaps the best option is a new coin, or maybe even make the first age coin, which is available already for 1 million GP, make it tradable. And they could purchase these coins from the banker, or maybe the GE trade, and then use them to buy items. And he says it seems far easier and a safer way rather than forcing people to use something like summoning shards and such, and would allow for people to have over 2.1 billion GP in value. Looking forward to you discussing the pros and cons on this, and may your gains be plentiful and enjoy those cocktails on the beach. Well, you know, I honestly feel that when we look at this, everybody sees this and says, "Yet, hey, yes, this is the easy option. Just, you know, introduce a couple of coins like this, like the old school silver coin." And that's one way of doing it. But the problem with that is that if you were to make it tradable on the GE, there's a chance that player sentiment and player value could actually devalue that coin lower than the 10 million or 1 million GP that it's supposed to be at, or it could go even higher. So if these coins aren't to be used as actual currency that you just buy from the banker and have a static value associated with them, and you let their value flow and flux with what the player economy suggests, you could wind up exacerbating the whole inflation problem here. It's like Zimbabwe, where you have to pay millions of whatever their currency is for a loaf of bread, as an example, before that currency and economy collapsed with hyperinflation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a fan of having it be determined by GE value and traded on the GE. I think if anything, if they were to do this, you'd want to do it, start in smaller increments, like the 1 million mark, and just have it be something that is exchanged from the bankers, and then you can use those to buy things on the GE and, you know, trade them to players, but they would always have that same intrinsic value associated with it. And I say that, but there is the potential, if you allow them to be traded hand-to-hand with players, that in the eyes of players, you could wind up with that same inflation problem. So what you're left with as the only solution in the coin sense is that you would only be able to use them on the GE. But as we all know, the vast majority of big trades in-game take place person-to-person. And I don't think that this would dislodge that economy, because there are people out there who are so adamant on having their rare items and having their stacks of summoning shards not be devalued, that I think if this was brought into the game, I think the players would find a way around it and would just continue to trade behind the scenes with the shards and the associated value on those. So unless you were in a world or a universe, let's just say, where you had no individual person-to-person trading and everything was done GE-based, I don't think that this would work.
Why can't you just have one, like a special coin that you can also stack to 2.1 billion that just happens to be worth 1 million GP?
Well, how do you, like, how do you keep it worth a million GP?
Well, the same as why a $100 banknote is worth $101 banknotes.
Right, but you can't assert that in RS, because I can buy that coin from the banker and I can use that on the GE for 1 million.
Why can't I just right click a million coins in my inventory and say convert to a million gold coin? And vice versa. Why can't I just switch back and forth between the two?
So you're not saying, so you're saying do it as something that could just be interchanged and not necessarily something you'd have to purchase.
Yeah, exactly. Have it always, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Because if, right, and if you were using, yeah. And see, my entire premise with this is that it was built as something that you'd have to purchase. And as a result of that, if the person-to-person trade community said no, that you would see that value just completely hit the floor, well, it would maintain whatever you assigned it on the GE. But if you were just, you know, making something that wasn't even needed to be purchased and it was just a way of, you know, combining coins, for example, then yeah, that could work, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what I saw as the proposal here. Like in D&D, you have bronze coins and silver coins and gold coins and platinum coins, right? Like there's different gradations, and usually for the sake of gameplay reasons, we assume that if you need bronze coins but you only have a gold coin on you, you just magically convert that, right? Because who can be bothered keeping track of all this? we could do the same here, right? Just come up with, like, I don't know, platinum sheets as, like, worth 100 gold coins that you can use.
Yeah.
I don't think, I don't even
and
think.
And then
you
would
need
you just be able to
far,
use
right?
them with the GE?
Yeah.
And they'd have that value associated
handle.
With them.
Why not just update the money pouch to be able to hold that? Right? If you, like, most people will use the money pouch anyway these days.
Yeah.
That isn't, I mean, I hope at least, that isn't necessarily tied to the old item storage system. Just turn that into a 64-bit number. And all of a sudden you can chuck a whole bunch of extra money in your,
What do you do about the exchange, though?
You don't need to exchange at that point.
No. What do you do about the grand exchange that lists all the rares for more than 2.1 if you're going to allow...
You need to change those numbers as well. So it's a massive change. And that's the thing, right? Like, what Panacius proposes here, I think it is very expensive on Jagex's side to implement this, to also make the GEs.
Oh, yeah.
So the only really real thing you can, you know, you can really adopt here is, like, the only thing you can really fix is person-to-person trades, and that is what shards are currently being used for.
Yeah.
I think shards work fine. Like, you're talking about 1 million coins here, but that means we can go up to not just a trillion, we can go up to a quadrillion coins. I don't know if you need to want that, right?
Yeah, and you know, my only concern is that you wind up in a situation where the players don't want this kind of thing being done.
I think shards work fine, and sure, we could make that official, but I don't know what problems that solves immediately.
Yeah, it kind of gets around the bigger issue, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, the only people who run into this problem are, well,
the people transacting rares.
A very niche community.
Yeah.
If you think about people transacting real-world rares, right, they don't just show up with a suitcase of money like in the movies. Right? That's not how that works.
No.
That's not how that works. It really isn't. I mean, we all know what the modern solution to this is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
A Gilanor cryptocurrency.
Oh, God. You just had to go there, didn't you?
Yeah, of course I did. Shall we move on to my pick?
Yeah, we'll move on to your pick, but... if you make it so that they're actual physical coins that are tradable, that you have to transact from the banker, you have a problem. But if you make it so
then we might as well use bonds.
Exactly. And that's why it's a problem. It's because it's going to have that same issue. But if you just make it so if you have a stack of 2.1 bill, press combined, hey, you got 2,100 coins here, each worth a million, right?
Yeah.
Completely different on that stack. And then, say you want to buy something for more than that, just use those coins instead. And then add a few other coins on top of it. Like you said, just a question of changing coins. And as long as that there is no GE value associated with them, it will be fine. And that's the problem with the idea that Parnassius had using the first age coin or purchasing these things from the bankers, that assigns a value to them that can fluctuate with the economy. Whereas if you just, you know, have an advanced GP, I called it that, an advanced GP, that you can convert to easily, like you said, that's really not that much of a problem. So that's the way to do it. Or just get rid of the 32-bit cap on currency, on items. But that, I imagine, would be a mammoth task internally.
It would also double your storage requirements of storing all the packs.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. But no. maybe the money pouch.
The money pouch and the GE, you can make some concessions on. So
yes,
and you know
you don't even need 64 bits, right?
No, you could
do the weird thing and go for a 48 bit number. They exist.
Oh yeah, there's unique ways of doing that. Have you ever seen one of those cases where people will take a 32 bit int and stack it next to a 16 bit short and combine the two for a number?
No, but I've done some magic on my own at some point.
Okay, fair enough.
I think MySQL even has a 48-bit integer type.
It does.
It's called a medium?
It's medium int, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Sorry about that, everyone.
Nerds.
Okay, thank you, Parnassius, for that question. Let's move on to Picks of the Week. If you guys want to send your own questions in, email them questions@rsbnb.com, leave them on Twitter @rsbnb, or our new questions form at update.rsbnb.com/ask. All right, Pick of the Week. And this is an interesting one on your end.
Yeah, so my Pick of the Week is a bit of an homage at a technological device. Very sophisticated technological device that is about 30 years old right now and has for...
That's about as old as you and I.
Older, older than me. And has been flying circles around the Earth for most of that time. I am talking about the Hubble Space Telescope. Might be a bit of a weird choice, and it would be right. Like, why would Sirian pick the Hubble Space Telescope as his pick of the week? Well, over the past few weeks, it has been having a bit of a problem. So it is 30 years old, right? And we think of all the satellites up there, because that's what it is, in a sense, it's a satellite. We think about satellites up there as pretty high-tech things, right?
Yeah.
What kind of computers did we have here down on the ground 30 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Like, most households didn't have a computer yet, I think.
Right, and just for comparison's sake, in this day and age, you can run a Raspberry Pi off a battery, which has countless more times horsepower than the kind of computers we're talking about in space. So go back to 1990, look at the kind of computer you had on your desk, and then shrink the power supply for that, and that's what we're running things like the Hubble Space Telescope with.
I think... Like, this is still, I don't know the exact number, the clock speed anymore, but it is slow. Like, it is very, very slow. But yeah, it's 30 years old, and it was expected to last, it was expected to last 10. It's now lasted 30. But, you know, some of the hardware failed, and, I am not qualified to talk about it in a lot of detail, they lost. Well, they still have contact, but they can't do anything.
Is this the mirror fail? Oh, the mirror failed and doesn't work anymore.
No, I don't think so. They still have contact with it, right? So communications are not broken. It's just that. There's a whole bunch of hardware that's not working. So the observation side of things is not really working. And they've been trying to fix it. They've tried calling in some backups that failed. They're now doing a complete switch to the backup software. So hopefully that will work. Maybe by the time this podcast is out, the results of that are known. But you need to imagine that this is debugging a 30-year-old computer that is many hundreds, if no, thousands of kilometers away from the Earth, perhaps. Hundreds of kilometers away from the Earth.
It's higher than the ISS, I know, in terms of its orbit.
It's definitely higher than ISS, yeah.
547 kilometers it orbits at. The ISS goes between 300 and 330.
Yeah, so there you go. So it's all the way up there, and they're debugging it remotely, and, you know, who can still debug 30-year-old computers these days? So,
yeah,
very impressive. An interesting thing is that the Hubble telescope went up in a space shuttle, of course, in the cargo bay of a space shuttle, and it just happens to be that last week or so we had... it was 10 years since the last space shuttle went up. So, there we go.
And one of the last space shuttle missions was actually, well, not one of the last ones, but one of the ones in the sunset of the space shuttle era was actually a Hubble Space Telescope servicing mission.
Yeah, so, you know, the unique capability of the space shuttle was to be able to do EVAs of it, right? EVAs, extravehicular activity, I want to say. Which is basically you put on a spacesuit and you go outside. Which you can't do in modern day spaceships. Like, you can't open the hatch of a dragon. you can't, right? It's not made for that. And the space shuttle had an airlock and all the stuff needed. So they surfaced the Hubble Space Telescope. You know, they bolted on new computers and all that stuff. And they can't do that anymore either. So... if they can't boot up the hardware again, it's gone. That's it, right? That's it. So I would be very sad. But
do you think that there's ever going to be a case to be made to have another reusable vehicle that is as versatile as the space shuttle was?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Spaceship by SpaceX will perhaps fit that bill, right? So they're building versions of Spaceship that can land on the moon, so it will have an airlock and it will have all that stuff. So I think it is within the realms of possibility, but yeah. I don't think it will be a space plane.
Right. And yeah, and that was the whole big thing of the space shuttle program, is you built this thing that launched like a rocket, but it landed like a plane. And, you know,
it was meant to take, the original plans had it take off as a plane as well.
Yeah, but they never figured that out.
I mean, the space shuttle program was in many ways a failed experiment as well.
But they, you know, they had it, and they just had to run with it because it worked for so long.
There was a lot of political reasons that it was. Like, commercially, it made no sense.
No, it didn't.
It was expensive.
You know, it wasn't. They were initially supposed to launch every 2 to 3 weeks or so, but that was effectively changed to 2 to 3 times a year. Just because of the costs associated with them.
It was expensive. It wasn't as reusable as they wanted it to be. And, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, I wanted to call it out anyway because, you know, the Hubble Space Telescope is, you know, fundamental to some of our main understandings of the universe as a whole. So, you know, we knew that the universe was... expanding, right? The space between stars and the space between galaxies is slowly expanding. It was the Hubble Space Telescope's, the observations it did, that actually led us to find out that this acceleration is expanding. So thanks to the Hubble Space Telescope, we now know of the existence of what we call dark energy. And the Hubble Space Telescope...
Oh boy, here we go. I was wondering if you were going here.
I won't go into too much technical detail, right? But, like, at the same time, the Hubble Space Telescope also learned a lot about dark matter, which is actually what makes galaxies have more mass than we expect them to be.
Yeah, because you can't account for all the mass in the stars that you see. So there's got to be something
exactly.
else. And there's got to be something driving those forces.
And the Hubble Space Telescope has been fundamental in finding out those things. So it is truly a marvel, and if it dies, then it is sad, and we'll have to wait until the James Webb Telescope finally launches.
Yeah, that's going to come online at some point, hopefully.
Maybe. It was meant to go offline like a decade ago. And
yeah, it hasn't.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. But... I just wanted to call it out, and all the best to the people debugging a 30-year-old computer 1,400 kilometers into the sky. But
how do you get 1,400? How do you get 1,400 kilometers?
Didn't you say that?
No, 530.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that number. So, yeah. Beautiful piece of hardware, and that's my pick.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's good. We haven't done a deep dive like that in a while, and I think we got to do another one of those right now, because in what I thought was an April Fool's Day post that was a number of months late, Steam announced something called the Steam Deck today.
When you portable... mentioned that, I thought you were going to talk about the Stream Deck, which is a completely different thing. But no?
Yeah, so this is a piece of hardware from Steam, designed to play Steam games on it. 7-inch touchscreen, 1280 by 800 display in the year of 2021. It's got an AMD 4-core chip on it, 2.4 gigahertz with burst up to 3.5. 8-core GPU, AMD RDNA 2, so fairly modern. 16 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage on the base model. You can upgrade it to 256 or 512. That'll be faster storage. And battery-operated 7-inch display, runs a variant of Linux that plays Steam games, and it runs Steam OS 3. There's also going to be a dock that has DisplayPort, power, Ethernet, USB on it. You connect it up with a USB-C cable, and you can then connect that dock to a TV or a computer monitor. Available December 2021. Reservations open on July 16th. Now, what does it sound like I'm describing here?
Sorry, why did you paint my Switch black?
Yeah.
I don't appreciate people painting my consoles.
It's got two thumbsticks, it's got triggers, it's got grip buttons, it's got a touchpad on it. Gyros. It's everything the Switch has.
Yeah.
Even the SD card reader.
So the Switch has been really successful in filling a niche, right?
And yeah.
Honestly, part of the reason that I have a Switch lying around is, well, I want to play Zelda games, but also, you know, before things changed drastically in the world, I traveled quite a lot, and having, you know, a console that you can take around in a plane, very, very useful, very nice. So that fills a niche. I am not sure if this can compete in that niche. Right? Like, on the one hand, this is way more expensive. It's more powerful, but it's way more expensive. Right?
Yeah.
It looks unwieldy.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Like, the Switch looks slicker, and I can't say that Nintendo consoles are traditionally very economic, but this looks worse. You know, it looks very unwieldy and heavy. And you're going to be playing games that are not made for a touchscreen or controller, right? So, I don't know if this... Like... This might tick that tick the boxes when you have no internet or something like that. But I feel that this exact same use case of playing games portably on a device that you can actually carry... Don't we have game streaming services for that these days?
Yeah, and, you know, that raises the question of, you know, whether you want the internet. It says Steam Deck runs Steam OS 3, and thanks to Proton, your build will likely work right out of the box. And the reason I bring that up is because this is running Linux behind the scenes, and the question is, how much of the Steam library are you going to be able to access with this thing? That's the question, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And yeah.
Like, right now on the list of this, it shows Ace Combat, Skies Unknown, Death Stranding, Dying Light, Ghost Runner, Guilty Gear, It Takes Two, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, No Man's Sky, and Portal as a few of the games it mentioned. It also shows Doom on there as well. Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch Remastered, other ones. So the question is going to be, how big is the game universe for this going to be? And do people who play games on Steam really want something like this?
I kind of feel that if you're going to have a piece, like, if you're in the PC side of this PC Master Race battle, you're going to want a PC that you can upgrade and then take apart. Like, that's the big appeal, right?
Yeah.
If you're on the console side of things,
you just want something that plugs and goes.
You want a console, right? This, I don't know who is going to be incredibly exciting about this. Like, looking at how unwieldy this thing is, and having some experience with Steam hardware, and how that basically all the Steam hardware so far has flopped, I'm not super confident that this is really what I'm looking for. Like, in a way, I like the idea, right? I bought the Switch for the exact reason that I can take my games along with me, but this, I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you'd have an instant success here if everything that ran on Steam ran on this. And, of course, it's going to be up to devs if they want to do this. This is obviously...
Those games aren't made for this platform.
Right.
And we know RuneScape just took 5 years to make it somewhat convenient to play on a touchscreen.
Yeah. And that was my next question, is what's going to be the case for RS on this?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
Because this is primary input model on this is the two sticks.
Or the touchscreens.
Or the touchscreen. But
I mean, they tried this with the Steam controller, right? They replaced one of the analog sticks with a touchscreen, and they showed you can play SimCity with your touchscreen. How many people really do that? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, and it shows a lot that when this appeared, I thought it was an April Fool's Day joke.
I think that if they had released this maybe 2 years ago, it would have been an instant success, right? Like, that's when the Switch was just coming, like, showing up, and it would have been a massive
ask
success.
Ask anyone who has a Steam Link how many times they use that, and there's your answer to how this will be used.
I've used it once or twice.
There you go.
Yeah. It had releases too, but now with the prevalence of, like, streaming games to your phone, you know, I feel that the business case for this device has sadly been vastly reduced.
Yeah. And, you know, any phone can run pretty much any game, as we've proven recently with mobile hardware changes. And it's just going to be a question of how niche is this going to be and how much money is Valve going to throw away on this, I think. So
I think it's going to be really easy to measure its success, right? When I am traveling by public transport here in London, it is very regularly that I see people playing on a Switch. If I start seeing these things appear on public transport, I'll let you know.
Arriving holiday 2021. All right. Let's do some picks of the week then, starting off...
picks? We did our picks?
Or sorry, achievements of the week. Start us off.
Yeah, Sigma Gamma got 99 Dungeoneering on July 14th, and Spy Woman, Man, got 99 Defense on July 14th. On July 13th, we have Captain Meta 4 with 120 Defense, Queen Adina at 99 Herblore, and Shamrock Soup with 99 Woodcutting, and Uber Plastic with 99 Ranged. Then moving on to July 11th, where we have Dennis with 120 attack, Kinky Sliske with 99 invention, and Luke XF with 99 defense. I really struggled through those, my goodness.
All right, next up we have Prideus with 99 strength, Tani Kiat with 99 magic, Questar Shit with 120 constitution, Eryx with 99 construction and 99 cooking, Prideus again with 99 defense, Zabros with 99 slayer, and Prideus with 99 slayer. And wrapping it all up, we have Rex Compidium with 99 defense on July 8th. Congratulations, everyone. Well done.
Well done.
All right. What have you been up to on RS?
Nothing. No. I finished the act track last week.
And oh, good.
I honestly haven't really logged in since.
Take note, Jagex. Take note.
And even then, yeah, I was pretty burned out on Yak Track in the end. I got 113 archaeology, which was a big milestone for me because that unlocks Solo City. So that's good. But now comes the big final stretch to 120 that I'm not looking forward to.
Well, you can look forward to it because you got Red Rum 3, and you also have a huge chance of getting Spear Tips.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
I set the benchmark at getting 2, so you can do that too.
All right.
As for me, I after Yak Track, like you mentioned, it was hard to find things to do until the beach came back, and I say that, and that's the truth. I did a bit of woodcutting. I did 1 hour session of Golden Bamboo. I did another hour session of Elders, and then I went to the player-owned farm and I started configuring and tinkering. I only need to get the shiny spider and the shiny yak, and then Manor Farm is done, and I've started working on shiny dinosaurs.
Very nice.
Yeah, and what I'm doing is I start with whatever of each dinosaur I have, then I reroll the traits for genetic mutation or genetic instability to breed more traits onto them. And then after that, when I breed one with 2 or 3 traits, I roll for the sparkling, glistening, radiant combination, and then just keep going with that until I have a shiny. So I'm going to have a lot of work to do with the dinosaurs on that because those take a huge amount of time to brew. I mean, breed. Brewing dinosaurs.
Probably brew as well. They're pretty big, so.
But in any case, hopefully you guys have enjoyed this episode of RSBNB Update. If you guys want to subscribe to it, you can do that at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, and YouTube. Give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. It helps the channels out, like the podcast when it arrives. And you can also check out the nibbles there as well. I should have a few good ones coming from this episode. So we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
Bye.